So, for the talk today, unusually I did have a title which I wanted to talk about this evening. And the reason I'm giving this title, giving this subject, is because it was suggested to me by the monks down at the Great Southern in Albany. For those of you who weren't here earlier, I was mentioning that last week there was quite strict COVID restrictions here in Perth, but the restrictions over in the Great Southern weren't so strict, so I could give some talks. And anyway, I went down to Albany last weekend and give some instructions there. This is a nice, beautiful little hermitage we have got down there with Venerable Mudu and Niwata there at the moment with Anagarika Kapoor. And it's the first time I could spend plenty of time there to really feel out the place. It's gorgeous. And also for the monks there, they exceeded my expectations. One of the reasons they exceed my expectations is because I don't have expectations. I always tell people, lower your expectations. And then wherever you go, you feel so uplifted. We have all the expectations that the people we want to live with, expectations of our parents, expectations of ourselves, expectations of our Buddhist society. And sometimes those expectations are so great that we get depressed, angry, disappointed, fed up. And the main reason for that is one of those little sayings which I made up: we're asking from this world things it cannot give us. And you see that with wisdom, so it can't be the way you really want it. This is a human world. This is where we're learning. If this world was perfect, there'd be no point being born here. This imperfect world, and that's where we learn how to change our attitude to the world. We can't change the world, but we can always change our attitude. And when we change our attitude, then we find it's a very beautiful world. And that's what I'm talking about this evening. How to change our attitude from seeing the defects and faults and what's wrong with ourselves, with our partners, with our parents, with our government, with our monks and nuns, or with whatever, and learning how to overcome that. I don't know, I may be wrong here, but the last 6 months, 12 months, COVID time, I noticed that that's just added an extra dimension of negativity to people's lives. People get quite fed up. Oh, more lockdown, more restrictions, we can't do this, we can't do that. And it goes against people's, you know, what they think is a freedom. And of course those two types of freedom, I'm not going to go off on too far a tangent here. The two freedoms, the freedom of desire and the freedom from desire. The freedom of desire to do whatever you want, whenever you want to do it. Why should I not be able to do this? And the freedom from desire is when you say, no desire. Then you're always free. But anyway, a lot of times we have negativity because of, you know, the situations of life. How do we deal with that? Now, fortunately, here in Western Australia, we've done pretty well, but still many people here in Western Australia would love to go and visit our friends here, go overseas, invite our friends overseas to come and visit us, because we can't do that. And if you do manage to get overseas, you have to pay a fortune for an airline ticket. So the whole thing is just very difficult these days. Now you can see what I've just been saying in the last 2 minutes is all negative. Seeing the faults. And when I went to Albany, the topic of the talks they wanted to me to talk about was on gratitude. And I saw that and I thought, wow, what a great topic. Because when we have gratitude, we're not seeing the faults in others, in ourselves, in the government, in life, because of these viruses which restrict us. We're not seeing the faults, we're seeing the goodness, the beauty in things. When you have gratitude, it sees things in a totally different way. And one of the examples I gave was, I've only got so many stories, you've heard this before, I am sure, but in a sense of gratitude, it was the story when I got an invite to teach at the morning assembly at Christ Church Grammar School. And the reason was is because I've been going to teach at the Cancer Support Association in Railway Parade, Cottesloe for so many years. Every year for about 30 years or more. And actually they're coming to monastery in about 10 days' time to visit. So anyway, I've been going there such a long time. One of the other people who would be going there, it became a good friend of mine. Again, I don't mind where the friends come from. And this was an Anglican priest called Frank Sheehan. And Frank became a good friend. And he was also the chaplain at Christ Church Grammar School. So he invited me, he said, "You give good talks, you're fun to listen to, why don't you come to our school and teach the kids there?" Which I did. Now, it's nice to give talks here at Buddhist centres. You know, sometimes when it's a weird talk, you know, that's when I really get into it. I've given some very weird talks in my life. I mentioned that one of those talks was the keynote address of the World Computer Conference in South Korea. That was a cool talk. And if ever you see me on a computer, it's very difficult for me to use a computer. I'm 70 years old now, next month. So, you know, I'm not really the sort of person who knows about computers, but nevertheless I went there, and of course all these people, I mean, these were really experts. And they said, "What the heck are you doing here?" I kind of like that, when people say, "What are you doing here?" It challenges me, but I gave a nice talk there, and they were very, so impressed, they gave a $2,000 donation to the Buddhist Society of West Australia. I don't get anything out of it, except fun. Yeah. And also going to this big conference over in London, they paid all expenses. And CSIRO invited me to Sydney to give a talk there once. Get some really nice gigs, as they say. But anyway, just in this particular occasion, just when, now I've forgotten what I was going to say, I was going to all these other things I was supposed to do and not do and whatever. Where was I? Oh yeah, yes. It's sometimes that when you get negative to things, you lose your energy, you lose your inspiration, you lose your happiness. So instead, I do remember that the gratitude is not just seeing the faults in things, but seeing something which is much more beautiful in things. And so when the time when COVID came, the first thing I said to myself and to others, I've said so many people say one of their biggest problems in life is not having time. We used to start talking about money or material rich, but time poor. And I started thinking about being time poor and to say, well, COVID is a wonderful opportunity to enjoy your time in lockdown. You can't go outside. You can't go meeting people. You can't go to the shops to buy, you know, unimportant stuff. You learn how to live simply and peacefully and have all the time in the world. Why do people get upset at that? So first of all, I was trying to see something good and be grateful for lockdown. Right now, one of the reasons we couldn't send someone here last week, as I was mentioning, was The person who was supposed to come here last week, Ajahn Bhumali, was in quarantine. He went over to Sydney and had to do 2 weeks quarantine. And now I think, oh, how lucky he is. And I was thinking that maybe I should go to Sydney next week, just for a day, and come back so I can do 2 weeks of quarantine and no one can argue about it. Or something. Sometimes you see the benefits in what everyone else thinks is terrible. You're grateful for these events in life which challenge you. I don't know how many people get upset when they have somebody who leaves them. It could be like your partner in life. Now, if you've had a long relationship with someone and they sort of depart for one reason or another, do you get upset and depressed? Of course, you know, I've been a monk for so many years, but I wasn't born a monk. Even though my mother did tell me that I was born with no hair, it must have been an omen. But nevertheless, that I remember having one girlfriend once, and she dumped me. For 6 months we were going out together. It's a long time. And I'm so grateful to her for dumping me. Otherwise, I would have never had the opportunity to be a monk. So whatever happened, even that time, I thought, yeah, you know, you're just missing somebody. But then you gain your freedom. You can always see the beauty in things. When my father died, yeah, it was sad that he wasn't going to be in my life anymore. But I was so grateful for all he taught me. You know, when I decided to become a monk, yes, I didn't have all that food which I used to like, but I was so grateful to having the opportunity and freedom of being a monk. And it was that gratefulness, that gratitude, that was where I could see the beauty in things. And we developed that. There are people in your life, they're not the best people in your life, and sometimes they may have hurt you. Is that all they've done for you, just to hurt you? Of course, sometimes that when someone has acted in an inappropriate way towards you and caused you distress, can we not have some gratitude for them to see something else in them which they did for you, gave to you? Because there's no person I've ever seen is all bad. Never. And for those of you who challenge me on that, please have a look in that book which I wrote, Open the Door of Your Heart. And in there you'll find a beautiful poem written by this aspiring poet artist about his mother. It's a beautiful poem because when I first read it, it was a nice poem about being grateful to your mum. And always just, even though she's very demanding when she gets old, remember, she looked after you when you were young, brought you up and sacrificed so much for you. And the reason why I like that poem and I got permission to reproduce it in that book, Open the Door of Your Heart. It's easy to open the door of your heart to good people, but this was opening the door to your heart to someone you never expect, because that poem was authored by Adolf Hitler. And you see that in the book. What? Did I make a misrepresentation of its author? No. And sometimes we always feel that some people are just bad to the core. But there he was showing this beautiful love for his own mum. And that was just an example. You never see all bad. You can always see something good in people. And if you can see something which is good in what you think is an enemy, when you have gratitude for them, it changes the whole relationship. Anyway, the story which I forgot, I was in the middle, I was going to Christchurch Grammar School. That was actually where it created some harmony between, for me anyway, Christianity and Buddhism. And seeing it in a different way. Because when I went there, we had to wait outside. The Frank Sheehan, myself, And the principal, I forget who the principal was at the time, don't know his name, but he said he was a devout Christian, and he said, "You're a Buddhist." "How do you guess that?" I said. "I wish I had said that, no. But anyway, you're a Buddhist, I'm a devout Christian, and so is the chaplain, Frank Sheehan. So when we go inside the building, we're going to do a quick bow to the statue of Jesus there. You're a Buddhist, you don't have to do that." I said, "No. I'm going to demand my right to bow to your statue of Jesus." And of course, that was something you never expected. I like saying things which people don't expect. Wakes them up, see things in a different way. Because then I said to him, I said, "I can see something in your statue, which I respect, not everything. I am not sort of a Christian, I'm a Buddhist. I know the very many bad things which Adolf Hitler did. But there was one part of him you could see which you could respect. His love for his mum. And that can change the whole way you look at somebody. And the whole way you look at your husband, your wife, your parents, yourself, COVID, life and death." And so when I went into that hall, I did a quick bow to the statue of Jesus. What happened next was very inspiring for me, because the result of that, I never did this on purpose, but 2 or 3 weeks later, the kids of Christ Church Grammar School came to visit Bodhinyana Monastery in Serpentine, together with the principal, and the principal arrived in his car. I met them in the car park, and then together, the two of us, the kids came in later, we went inside the main hall of Bodhinyana Monastery with this big Buddha statue sent from Thailand. And the two of us, we bowed to the statue of Buddha together. I bowed to his statue of Christ, he bowed to our statue of Buddha. And that was actually breaking the things, the barriers between different ideas. I don't see why more people can't do that when they respect other people's ideas and opinions and views. And if they can do that, it does mean that we create more peace in this world. We have gratitude towards others. But if you do remember that book, The Opening of the Door of Your Heart, it's been out for about 20 years now, that in there is one of these stories called The Most Beautiful Sound in the World. And that most beautiful sound in the world was an old story which I read somewhere of an old man who lived up in the mountains, and he worked very hard in a very poor village so that his children could have a really great education. And the children, they did work hard at school and then at university, and then they went to town, then to the city, where they established themselves in good careers. And after they had established themselves, they decided together to invite their father into the city for the first time. And this father had worked hard all his life. He'd never seen a major city before. And so when he went into that city, he saw things he'd never ever seen before. And one of the things he didn't actually see, he heard it, this really terrible, terrible, terrible sound. But even though the sound was very hard to listen to, he couldn't resist finding out what was causing what he decided was the worst sound in the whole world. And he followed it to a house, in the back room of a house. He saw a little child trying to play the violin. He'd never seen a violin before in his life. And he saw this little child. It was a terrible noise. And so he thought, violins are bad. He never wanted to hear a violin again. Same day, in the afternoon, past another house. This time he heard a beautiful sound, one of the most beautiful sounds he'd ever heard. Followed that to the front room of a house, there he saw an old woman playing the violin, the same instrument. There was an old woman. She had learned how to play that violin. And she was a maestro of that instrument. And he thought straight away that he'd made a mistake judging the instrument rather than judging the person. I mean, not even judging the person was still learning. It's so easy to judge people. They're still learning their craft. When you learn it well, sometimes people can make some beautiful music with their religion, philosophy, faith, ideas. And then, the next day he heard the most beautiful sound in the world. And I remember writing, trying to express what a beautiful sound was. He said, more beautiful than the sound of the rain up in the mountains. More beautiful than the sound of the creek after the heavy rains, or the birds at dawn up in the mountains, or the wind rustling the leaves. I live up, well, not really a mountain, but hills, down in Serpentine. In Bodhinyana Island Monastery, very often there's some beautiful music of the wind or the silence. The silence is what I like the most. But anyway, even more beautiful than that, the next day he heard this sound which captivated him, the most beautiful sound in the world. And of course those of you who know this story and have read it in the book and remembered it would know the most beautiful sound in the world was the sound of an orchestra. And he said it was the most beautiful sound for two reasons. The first of all, everybody in the orchestra was a maestro of their own instrument. They have trained for years until they are experts. But secondly, they'd all learned how to play together in harmony. There's incredible movements and symphonies, and that's why to him it was the most powerful music in the world. Because they'd learned their instruments well, and they'd learned how to play together in harmony. I love that story because so often that people argue, so often instead of just learning how to play together, to combine our understanding. I haven't said this story here, I was saying it down in Albany a couple of days ago, about the old elephant story. The old elephant story, the blind man and the elephant. What is an elephant? The one who felt the blind since birth, never felt an elephant before. The one who felt the leg said it was tree trunk. The one who felt the tail said it was a fly whistle. The one who felt the body that it was a rock. The one who felt the head said it was a pot. The one who felt the tusks said it was a plough used by the farmers. One who felt the ears said it was a fan. One who felt the one who felt the trunk said it was a snake. And they argued what it was. They were all right. Which one was wrong? They're all right. They had no respect for one another, no gratitude for what other people said. When you respect and have gratitude for other people's ideas, which are different than yours, you find out an elephant is a big rock on four tree trunks with a fly whisk at the back, a pot on the front with two ploughs on either side and two fans behind the ploughs and a snake in the middle, which is not a bad description of an elephant for one who will never see them. But I also remembered that once there were seven elephants. I wanted to find out they were blind, and the seven blind elephants wanted to find out what a man was. So how can they find out what a man was? They found one each and felt the man. When they came back, they weren't like human beings. They never argued. Elephants don't argue. They all agreed that a man was flat. You know, say one of those interesting gigs I did years ago, there was at this seminar in Hayman Island, and I told that story to what's her name? Julia Gillard, yeah. Julia Gillard and Wayne Swan, when they were up there. So they enjoyed that. But anyhow, just when we have respect or gratitude for things, it even really helps in our spiritual practice. So we're not here to find fault with ourselves or find fault with others. Even those people who do have any sicknesses, like depression. Can you be grateful for your depression? It's looking at it in a positive way. You can certainly find some positives in it. I remember talking to this guy in our Armadale group maybe a year ago. He came up to me afterwards, he said he was really suffering with depression, came to my meditation class to try and find a way out of it, and try and get rid of it. And I said to him, why do you want to get rid of your depression? Can't you see its benefits? You don't have to go to work. He said, oh yeah, that's true. You can lay in bed in the morning, you don't have to get up, you just say to your wife, I'm depressed. Yeah, that's a good idea. And the other thing, he said that morning, you know, he felt like he wanted to have some ice cream. Ice cream in the morning for breakfast. Usually his wife and family members would never let him have ice cream for breakfast. He felt like it, so he had two bowls of chocolate ice cream. That is a privilege you get with depression. You can eat whatever you like when you like it. He said, yeah. So I told him, look, the depression is not going to last that long. So when it goes, please keep it a secret. Don't tell anybody. So you can enjoy all the benefits of indulgence. So he got that. There's always some benefits in whatever you have in your life. And that's why I'm grateful for whatever happens. It might be difficult, it might even be painful. But you know that sometimes when it's really painful, you learn so much. And of course one of the biggest pains, you call it painful? Yeah, it was, but it was just that those sorts of sickness which just really exhaust you and you have fevers. That was that time in that hospital in Ubon for 45, 46 years ago. Somebody reminded me of that story a couple of days ago, because I contracted scrub typhus, which has the same symptoms as typhoid. And people in the hospital didn't know what it was. It was a really heavy fever. I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker, so they put me in hospital. And when they put me in hospital, because they didn't know what it was, this was in a third world country, in the backwaters of that third world country. You know, northeast of Thailand was just, you know, a place where, you know, the intelligent people didn't go, honestly. I'm being honest with you. And the hospital was really third world, and the monks' ward in that hospital, monks are supposed to be tough. So I do remember that. Is there any nurses here? There's one doctor here. In that hospital, now you have a fever, you feel terrible. They put you in a bed, put a drip in your arm. And then at 6 o'clock in the evening, I noticed a nurse. There's just one male nurse there. The opening to the ward disappeared. By 7 o'clock, the replacement nurse had not come. And I told the monk in the next bed, should we go and tell someone the replacement nurse hasn't turned up? And that's when he told me, there is no night nurse, ever. There's only a nurse for 12 hours of the day, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you get sick in the middle of the night, that's just unfortunate karma. You know, that wasn't very helpful, that wasn't very reassuring. But worse, the worst pain there was the injections. Now, you all know these days, when I had my first COVID injection about 2 months ago, you hardly felt it. Those needles were really, really sharp. But not in those days. It's true, those days the needles were recycled. Honestly, they would actually sterilize them, hopefully, and use them again and again and again. So it's only a theory, but I think it's probably got some justification to it. They usually used it in Bangkok, first of all, where all the wealthy people were. And then after they use them in Bangkok, then they'd send them up to the northeast. We couldn't afford new ones. And then they would keep using them, and they were lastly used on the monks, because they were supposed to be tough guys. That's what it felt like anyway. Because they were so dull. I still remember the nurse, female nurse, who would inject me twice a day, morning and afternoon. Actually, she never injected me, that's just an exaggeration. She stabbed me. That's the only way you could get it in. So these nurses, now sometimes people, you know, Thai girls, you know, really nice and beautiful and petite and nice, not in the northeast. Honestly. I tell the monks this, that's why they reminded me of this story, it's fresh in my mind. They said, that nurse, I said, and it's pretty accurate, was built like a water buffalo. Really strong. Had to be to stab you. That was really painful. But I'm grateful for her to give me another story to tell on a Friday night. It wasn't that bad. But I still recall that time, because the way that my fever stopped, it was about 3 or 4 weeks, I think. Nothing was working. And when you feel really, really tired, not tired, that's the wrong word, exhausted, no energy at all, and nothing is working, long way away from home, and feeling really, really bad for days and days and days. And that's when I did, you know, what a monk's supposed to do, what I teach you as well, learning how to meditate properly. And I'm so grateful for that experience, because I learned just doesn't matter how weak you are, how tired you are, how exhausted you are, doesn't matter about what physical position you're in, your posture, you can still get into the deepest of meditations, because that's what I did. Just let go. I didn't have enough energy to put forth effort into the meditation. I let things be, I stopped fighting. Allow things to be. And your mind gets really, really still. When your mind gets still, it gets very beautiful. So beautiful that the body just vanishes. You can't feel it anymore. You're just really enjoying the inside. Just, you know, that sometimes you may be watching a soccer match or a movie or something, and you don't feel the pain in the body, your leg's gone to sleep, or you need to go to the toilet. You don't feel that because you're just taken up by the beauty inside. So that's what was happening. I came out afterwards and felt wonderful. Best I'd felt for weeks. It taught me a lot. And for that, I've got a lot of gratitude to that illness. I can always see the positive things in it. And when you see the positive things in whatever you have to do in life, whatever happens to you in life, you see its beauty. A lot of times, that changes your whole attitude to what's happening in life. Life gives you many gifts. You know, you see your partner, which you freely chose, most of you. Have you got gratitude to them? You know, you can see all their faults very easily. Can you see the positive side? All the wonderful parts of them? Because this is something which, I've been a monk for maybe too long, because I'm going to stay as a monk, but sometimes I see people having difficulties in their relationship. I look at both of them, and they're both really good people. I thought, how come you can't sort of see the beauty and goodness in your wife? How come you can't see the wonderful qualities in your husband? We just get into this nature of only seeing what's wrong with them, rather than seeing the beauty in them. Just like, you know, living in Buddhist monastery. It's very easy to see what's wrong with the monastery, seeing its faults, the monks talking too much, talking about the wrong things, and getting involved in the internet too much. And just, it's very easy to see that, but to see the beauty in it. These men, young men, old men, really trying their best, the best they possibly can, to create peace, to find truth, to find something of meaning in their life. We give them that opportunity. Our nuns' monastery, I'm so grateful that they're there. So grateful that after all that hard work we have bhikkhunis, fully ordained women, here in Western Australia. That's mind-boggling. I don't care about, you know, how good they are, how bad they are, whatever. Just the fact they're there. I feel a lot of joy and happiness in that. And then what happens? I teach that to the monks who meditate. How was your meditation today? Can you not feel this beautiful sense of gratitude for your body and mind? They got so far in meditation, you could sit quietly for half an hour. When you want more, you can't enjoy what you already have. When you don't have gratitude, you miss out these amazing benefits which you take for granted in life. So you don't enjoy them. And so they slip away from you. It's like life gives you these wonderful opportunities to rejoice in whatever you have, in peace, reasonable health, you're alive. You've got someone who can look after you and care for you. We often miss the great benefits of gratitude. I'm a bit tired today because I came and rushed in early because of the great storm we had, that there's traffic chaos on the Kwinana Freeway. So we got in here late, but it was to do a funeral service for someone. I always remember the story, a true story, of someone who did a funeral service while they were still alive. They, you know, had some sort of disease, which was terminal disease, they weren't going to recover. And so about 1 month before they died, they decided to hold their own funeral so they could actually attend it with consciousness. I thought, what a brilliant idea that was, because you've been to funerals and people say all these wonderful things about you. And usually you're dead, and you can't hear it. So wouldn't it be wonderful to, you know, you're going to die anyway. The doctor said maybe a month to live, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but it's not going to be that long. So you have your own funeral service while you can actually benefit from it. And that's what he did, and good on him. So all the people who came, they said these wonderful words about him, and he could actually listen to it. And apparently he also took notes of who didn't come, so he could cut them out of his will. But have you ever noticed that, the gratitude we have, or we express at a funeral service? And that's one of the reasons I love doing funeral services. Honestly, I enjoy them because I like to listen to the, actually we missed the eulogies today because we came late. I love listening to the eulogies where people look at these people you've known, or you've been married to, your mother, your father, and you feel what's really important for you, and the gratitude which you have towards them, which is really quite moving. So because of that, the gratitude is something which, it's a shame we don't show that before a person passes away. It's one of the reasons why we always remember people with love, gratitude, We take all the wonderful things they've done and forget about any faults which they have. We're grateful for their goodness. So little by little by little, we change our attitude towards our life and even towards your meditation practice. Just to be grateful, to have half an hour where you can be peaceful. No, it wasn't good enough. I want to get some deep meditation. Now I get that from many people because I'm a meditation teacher. I said, look, if you want so much depth in your meditation, you'll never get it. There's many people, they know their Buddhism, they want to be a soul one, a stream winner, before they die. You'll never get it with that type of attitude. Aren't you grateful for what you've experienced, what you've understood so far? It's wonderful. I've had this wonderful opportunity to practice Buddhism, to offer dharma and listen to teachings, to help, to serve. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That's the way to become a stream winner. To get deep meditation. To enjoy the happiness you already have, which you see in front of you. And let that take you into deeper happiness. It's one of the reasons why in the meditation I've been teaching here for years, I say that when you relax, can you not enjoy the delight of a relaxed body? Oh yeah, but that's nothing, just relaxation. I want to go deeper, I want to be enlightened, I want to get these. Can't you just enjoy that? Be grateful for the joy which is right in front of you. I have an old saying that once there was a man and he was cooking his rice in the evening for dinner. He had the rice and the water in the pot. He had the wood underneath the pot, but he couldn't find the matches to light the wood. He was looking for the matches. Where did I put the matches? You know what he was looking for the matches with? With a candle. Where's the matches? I can't find the matches. If he only knew what fire was, he could have cooked his rice much earlier. And sometimes that's an old story which I think is so appropriate. We all want to get some peace, health, deep meditation, happiness, meaning. And for those of you who are really getting deep into your meditation, we want to get jhanas, these deep, beautiful meditations. We all want to get some deep insights. If that's what you want, you'll never get them. What are the deep insights? What is the happiness of meditation? It's right here. You don't go searching for it. You stop the searching. And what's left is the happiness. Just, I don't know the last time I said this, but this cartoon is still, well, the last time I went to Jhana Grove, it was still there on the wall. Very easy teaching about how to become enlightened. About the very angry man who came to see the monk. And the angry man had a sign, like a protest sign, which read, "I want happiness." I mean, how many times have you been coming to this Buddhist center? We've been promising you happiness, have we? Have you got happiness yet? You should protest. You monks have been promising this and promising everything and just Buddhism is supposed to make you enlightened. I haven't got it yet. This is not right. It's not working. Protest. And so he gave this protest sign. I want happiness. Really upset and angry. And so the monk took it, said, "Your first problem, your first mistake, sir. I." He scrubbed that out. "Second problem, sir. Second mistake. Want." He scrubbed out the want. Then the monk held up the sign. What's left? Happiness. Very simple, but actually very profound. I want happiness. The two problems there is the I and the want. Scrub those two out. There's only one thing left. Happiness. You might say, I want enlightenment. I want someone. I want jhana. The I and the want is the problem. So little by little, we learn how to be grateful. And gratitude is another way of saying no desire. Learning to appreciate what you have. Learning to appreciate the good qualities in your partner. Learning to appreciate the good qualities in your children. Learning how to appreciate the good qualities in a beautiful city like Perth. Those qualities are there. If you don't, if you lower your expectations, you'll never be disappointed. Like I was not disappointed with those monks over in Albany last week. My expectation was so low. How can you be disappointed? They're great monks. So thank you for listening so far. Okay. So now we get some questions. How about some questions from people here? Any questions? If you ask a question, you can take your mask off. It's true, you're allowed to. Okay. Okay. So you notice the tablet hasn't got a mask on. Asking some questions. Oh my goodness me. From Indonesia. How do I meditate through sickness? My diseases sometimes get worse after meditating, sometimes it's better. How do I focus on the leg if my lung is painful? Whatever is the most painful part of your body, that's the one which you focus on, because that's drawing you in, it's asking for attention. And I just do the sweeping through my body because my body's pretty healthy. But if I had a bad leg, I'd go to my leg straight away, or a bad lung. If you've got a bad lung, of course you focus on that, because the body is drawing you in to focus on it. And so it's right in front of you, you're kind to it, you give this beautiful softness. And that's one of the things which I just mentioned earlier, that sometimes when you practice like this, you don't choose the meditation object. Now, whatever's right in front of your mind right now, that is almost like chooses you. It's in this moment, and you care for it. You don't try and cure it. Big thing which people make mistakes of is trying to cure it, trying to get rid of it, trying to be someplace where that pain isn't. But be with it. Because it's one thing which the Buddha said, which I practice, and it's so true. The physical pain is only just about 5% of the suffering. It's the mental and emotional reaction is 95%. And if you can somehow notice that, the physical pain doesn't disappear, but it's added to enormously by your reaction to it, the emotional part of it. And you can lessen the emotional response. That's why that one of my favorite men in Catholicism was this San Lorenzo. And you soon find out why I thought he was really cool. Now, he was a bit of a heretic, upset a few people. And you can upset a few people in Buddhism and nothing much happens to you. But in those days, 500, 600, 700 years ago, if you upset too many people in the Catholic Church, you get sort of killed, you get burnt alive at the stake. But it wasn't actually burnt on the stake. It's really cruel. They had this like grill, like a barbecue toaster or something. They put him on top and just to burn him to death. And imagine how painful that must be. His last words, apparently, before he went unconscious, translated into English, was, "Turn me over, this side's done." He said that, apparently. I thought, he's dying anyway, he can't escape, so I might as well make a joke about it. It's pretty cool. I like telling jokes. I'm not sure if I can do that, but that's pretty impressive. So you could do something like that. It's possible. So sometimes it makes us think again. Sometimes get worse after meditating. You're not meditating to try and cure your sicknesses or to cure your pains. It's caring for them. So put more care in the meditation rather than trying to control them. From Bolivia, Ajahn Brahm, what is the Buddhist point of view about donating blood? Thank you. It's great. When I was in Thailand, I donated a lot of blood to mosquitoes. But no, I used to donate blood all the time over here. Not all the time, but maybe regularly. Remember just, that was where I remember this one young monk. I went with him to the Red Cross over in Wellington Street to donate blood. And when he donated blood, first of all, they had to check your blood pressure. And then I was next to him, and the nurse checked his blood pressure and said, "Hey, something's wrong." I thought, "Crikey, what's happening?" He said, "Your blood pressure's low, lower than before." He used to donate blood before when he was working for Western Power, you know, the electricity supplier. And she had a look at him and said, "You're a monk now, you changed your profession." He said, "Yeah, I'm a monk now." I said, "Oh, that explains it. You've been meditating, haven't you?" So even the nurses in those days, when meditation was, this was what, 35 years ago, 36 years ago, when meditation wasn't that well known, nurses knew that when you meditate, it lowers your blood pressure. I thought I was really inspired by that. But yeah, we used to donate blood regularly. And then I think when I went over to Thailand, and I think Malaysia, Singapore and places, they said, "Oh no, that, you know, that there may be some malaria over there, or, and so you know, you shouldn't donate your blood." I was really disappointed about that because I enjoyed donating my blood all the time. It's also, you have a free health check as well. That's where you found out my blood, it's not the best type of blood, it's A positive, I think. You know the best type of blood? B positive. It's obvious, isn't it? Be positive. Oh, this is... Hey, we've got a lot of good people here. This is, next one is from India. "Dear Ajahn, you had once said that being a dustbin without a bottom is achieved by getting to the heart of the matter. Similarly, what is the way to open the door of your heart?" Opening the door of your heart is just learning not to control life. And learning that it's much better to be kind and to care for people. You get much further, much more benefits with caring for people rather than trying to punish them and control them. Example of that, many years ago, this lady would come here to meditate. When we first started here, and after 7 years of coming here, she came to see me after a talk and she said, "I've come here not just to thank you for thank Ajahn Chakra and all the other monks who've been teaching here." And you know, she had this beautiful smile on her face and said, "Why?" And then she told her story. She'd come to our Buddhist society this such a long time ago because she was a victim of domestic violence. And this is, you know, 38 years ago, at a time when we didn't have the appreciation of, you know, how much suffering the woman goes through, didn't have all the resources. She said she wasn't a Buddhist at the time, she was now, but she just came here as a place where she could be safe for a couple of hours. And that's what she said. But little by little, you know, she was listening to these teachings and they worked. It took her 7 years, she said. What she did was the positive reinforcement, gratitude. Every time her violent husband was kind to her, she just made sure just how much her partner realized how grateful she was. She'd, you know, overdo the kissing, the hugging, the thank you so much. And the other thing, which was very hard to do, when she was punched or hit, she forgave straight away. It's very tough. It's not recommended, but that's all she could do. And my goodness, she did it so well. She said, "He doesn't hit me anymore now. We have this beautiful relationship. We had two beautiful kids." He said, "I changed him." She really did change this man, being a kind, caring man, just with that positive reinforcement. Well, I've often said, watering the flowers, not watering the weeds. That's very hard to do, but she did that. She opened the door of her heart, and her husband really appreciated, obviously, being changed into a very good man. Anyway, from Singapore, "I have bipolar and have great mood swings, no energy or will to live when depressed, and lots of energy despite sleep disturbance when manic. What can I do to alleviate the swing?" First of all, you may say you have bipolar, but remember you're much more than that. So it makes you not just be a prisoner of any mental disease. You find times when you're very aware of your mind, and you have strategies when you find that you're getting too much energy, with just mindfulness and kindness. Just don't overreact to it. When you're very low energy, don't get depressed about being depressed. Little by little you'll find the lows are not so deep, and the highs are not so extraordinarily high. You'll start to even out some more with mindfulness and kindness. Little by little, you know, you'll find what really agitates you, what really calms you down. So take that being bipolar as a great teaching for you, as an opportunity to learn more awareness, more mindfulness, and more kindness to your own body and mind. From Denmark, "I have meditated a lot lately, and it seems I'm experiencing more negative thoughts and actually become more unhappy, recalling bad memories during meditation. Any advice?" I'm not quite sure what type of meditating you're doing, but if the meditation is trying to control things, trying to own things, your sense of self becoming too strong, that's usually when you experience more negative thoughts. A lot of the times when your meditation is becoming more peaceful, because you are relaxing more, you're following the instructions, you're not trying to aim for something, you're being at peace, which means you don't need so much thoughts. Thoughts in meditation are usually a sign of a disturbed mind. They're like the waves on a body of water, like a lake. If that lake is reasonably relaxed, peaceful, then there's no waves on it. So the waves aren't you. They're showing that there's a wind blowing, or something underneath is agitating the water. So if that water is not agitated, the wind is not blowing, you're protecting your mind, you find the thoughts get less and less and less and become very, very absent. You actually become more unhappy. I can't really understand that. You meditate properly, your happiness increases and increases and increases. Your happiness gets less if you don't meditate. So the meditation isn't being done sort of properly or accurately. So check the way you're meditating and do it with less force. Lastly, from New Zealand, "When the Buddha says hatred is not stilled by hatred, is he talking about hatred between people or hatred in one's own heart?" Mostly hatred in one's own heart, but that also transfers to hatred between others. You may not like what a person does to you, but again, you realize that this world is never going to be perfect, and you're going to be disappointed. And some people are going to do things and say things, we say, "Why on earth did they say that?" Because they too are imperfect human beings, just like you. That you are an imperfect human being, but you're learning, trying to do better each time, hopefully. Buddha doesn't expect so much of people. So you don't expect so much of yourself. So you make a mistake, don't feel guilty about it. Don't try and be ashamed of it. You acknowledge it, learn from it, and grow from it. Become a better human being because of it. But hatred, still by more hatred, of course it doesn't get still by more hatred. In your own heart, it means we call that like double suffering, double dukkha. And I'm hating someone. I'm a senior monk, I shouldn't be hating anybody. And of course that hatred gets worse. You're reacting to it. So don't react to it. Hatred comes, okay, I made a mistake there, let's learn from that, be kind for it. And if it's somebody else gets angry towards you, why are they getting angry towards me? They got even angry towards the Buddha. Everyone is subject to anger. People got angry towards the Buddha because, well, his father got angry towards him. He says, enough losing you, but now I lose my grandson because he's now a monk. And so little by little, this, we can get angry for anything. And I don't know why people do that. Whatever you're feeling angry for, the feeling of anger is much worse. I always used to say that anger is like taking a hot coal and throwing it at your enemy, hoping you'll hit the enemy with a hot coal and they will hurt. Most times you miss, but you always get burnt. So anyway, there we go. Any questions from the floor before we depart? Any questions? You sure there's no questions? You're not going to line up in front of the usual office? Okay, never mind. So anyway, that next week we'll be back again on Friday and on Saturday, but on Sunday? No, because we're holding our entry to the rains ceremony on Sunday week, tomorrow week. No, not tomorrow week, on 9 days' time. And the entry to the rains ceremony, that's when that, you know, we are monks, we like to do retreats ourselves, and that's when we all stay at Bodhinyana Monastery for monks at Kusala Vihara, that's where, in Rolling Stone, where Ajahn Santuti will be, over in Albany for Venerable Mudu, for the nuns over in Dharmasara, as well as over monks over east, where we can have a bit of peace. And I, as a teacher over in Bodhinyana Monastery, can spend a lot of time just teaching the monks and the novices and Anagarikas there. So they get more special attention at that time. It's an old tradition of having 3 months of retreat in monastery. But you're all allowed to visit. And hopefully, if you don't visit, then after the 3 months retreat, you'll find me very thin. So please visit. Okay, so now let's pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go back if we need to.
Patipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangang Namami.